I am Mike Koenig. My compadre Egberto Willis is on the control board as usual, and thank goodness for that. And you're listening to 90.1 FM in Houston. We get an extra 19 seconds of show today because that's when the music started. So cool. We're going to have an open forum. We obviously at this point have open lines, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. 526-KPFT. Horrible week. I'm telling you, you know, the world has been going through some very, very difficult times, really kind of since the collapse of the Soviet Union, I would say in round numbers, like for the past 20 years. And it seems like geopolitically, it seems like we're heading towards some kind of a climax, which probably ain't good. So I guess I've got several topics I want to throw out, but open forum, you can discuss anything that might have kind of raised your eyebrows during the last week. The Paris attack. Belgium reacting as if it's under siege, really just kind of a couple of steps short of martial law. An appropriate moment to quote Benjamin Franklin here, that those who give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Well, as I often say, good advice is easy to give and hard to take. When you're detached from the circumstance, it's easy. When, you know, as they say, when you're up to your butt in alligators, I'm gentrifying that a little bit. When you're up to your butt in alligators, it's hard to remember that your initial objective was to drain the swamp. That's kind of where the world is going right now. We're kind of in the swamp. We've got the alligators. If the swamp itself represents liberty, which is kind of ironic because liberty is messy, are we in a position where we're sort of forgetting what the liberty is, because incrementally the fear and panic factor is being ratcheted up and becoming closer to home? So how much freedom are we willing or needing to give up for additional safety and security, if any? Are there alternatives to the security situation the world now faces? Should the West declare all-out war to try to end pan-jihadist terrorism? And of course, that raises the question of who do we declare war against? Or, lacking a formal declaration, who are we fighting a war against? Can't just, you know, as they said in the movie Aliens, can't just nuke them from orbit because it's the only way to be sure. That's simply not an option. So is there a third way or a fourth way? And I think concurrent with these questions, do religions and religious people of all faiths, I don't care what the faith is, whether it's Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, Judaism, if there are extremists in any faith, and there are, do the people of that faith have a responsibility to decry and disown their extremists? Do Christians have an obligation to disown Christian extremists. And keep in mind, most of the terrorist attacks in this country have been by terrorists who are Christians and extremist white supremacists or whatever, but Christians, not Muslims. Jews have their terrorists, have their extremists. Buddhists, there are countries where Buddhists can get really, really violent, which seems like an oxymoron, but it happens. So I think that's one question. Open lines, open forum, 713-526-5738. I've got Jerry on the line, but I just want to kind of run down this list a little bit, and then, Jerry, I'll get to you, I promise. Donald Trump. I have said before on this show that I think highly successful business leaders are inherently Let's put it this way. I think that highly successful business people simply are not qualified to be president by the very nature of what they do and what they've been highly successful at. I think Donald Trump is a great example. I think that, and I had his name on the tip of my tongue. Egberto Willis, the name of the fellow who ran against Clinton and Bush, Texas Instruments, the little guy with the giant sucking sound. What was his name again? Can't hear you. Okay, well, in any case, y'all know who I mean. I think that the problem with having highly successful business people as president is that by their very nature...
Perot.
H. Ross Perot, thank you so much. By their very nature, they tend to be authoritarian. They tend to be egotistical. They tend to be top-down. I think that Trump, while perhaps an extreme example, has demonstrated that he has no concept of constitutional democracy. He thinks he can wave a magic wand and by great management and his word and his force of will that he can accomplish anything. He acts as if the president is an emperor and that the rest of the world pays homage to the United States and we can force them to pay tribute, whether it's building a wall at their own expense or whatever it is we expect them to do. I think that when people talk about running government like a business, there is a fundamental and fatal misconception of what that means. Government is not like a business. Government is not like a household. The three things, a household, a business, and a government, they serve totally different functions. They function in completely different ways, and they have completely different impacts on society, sociologically, politically, economically. Anyone who confuses those three things as being similar in any way comparable, they just don't get it. So, you know, Trump says he supports people who roughed up a Black Lives Matter person at his event. He supports people who roughed up a protester. That is fascist. That is what Hitler's brown shirts used to do when anyone spoke up against Hitler. Okay? You know, there are people that say as soon as you mention Nazis, you've lost the argument, and I simply do not believe that. I think that throwing around any word or term carelessly is something you should not do. I don't think this is carelessly throwing around a word. This is what the brown shirts did when Hitler was trying to gain power in Germany, and what Mussolini's thugs did when he was gaining power and had power in Italy. This is no joke. This is serious, serious stuff. Another question I have to ask is, and I've thought about this, and I'm sure that there must be something. There must be. But thinking back, at least for the last, 70, 80 years, which is, you know, like almost half the life of this country, a third anyway, have conservative policies ever accomplished anything good in this country? I keep hearing about how important, from conservatives, of course, I keep hearing how important conservative principles are, and conservative principles will accomplish this, and conservative principles will make our country great again, as if it's not already great, or as great as, you know, it's going to be with its flaws and imperfections. And I just keep thinking to myself, Have we ever had a conservative government that did good things for this country? Have you noticed that the Republicans don't own most of their past presidents? The Democrats are willing to own a lot more of their presidents. The Republicans really don't own George W. Bush. They don't own George H.W. Bush. They love Reagan. Okay, so Reagan, they own Reagan. They don't own Nixon. They don't own Eisenhower, who wasn't a great president, but accomplished some useful things. They sure as heck don't own Herbert Hoover. They don't own Calvin Coolidge. They don't own, who is the guy who died that put Coolidge in office? He had a whole bunch of scandals, the Teapot Dome scandal, name again escapes me. I'm getting old, folks. You just have to bear with me on this. The last great president before Reagan, if you assume Reagan was a great president, which I don't, but the last great Republican president before Reagan, you'd have to go all the way back to Theodore Roosevelt. And before Theodore Roosevelt, in my opinion, you'd have to go all the way back to Abraham Lincoln, the first president of the Republican Party. So, I mean, we need to really think about this. Republicans really don't have anything to be proud of in terms of accomplishments and presidents to be proud of in the last 150 years. Really not. So if anyone out there has a difference of opinion and can give me some specifics, I would love to hear it. The last topic I'm going to bring up is the post office. I ran across an article, and I'll post the link on my webpage when I actually didn't have time to do a proper post today for this show, but I will. And it's an article by Elizabeth Warren called Coming to a Post Office Near You, Loans You Can Trust. And I'm just going to read you several excerpt paragraphs of this. According to a report by the Office of the Inspector General of the U.S. Postal Service, about 68 million Americans, about a quarter of all households, have no checking or savings account and are underserved by the system. I will insert at this point, I've talked about this before. This country has a serious problem with underbanking. People who, because of fees and monthly costs and minimum deposit requirements, cannot get or cannot afford a bank account. It's called underbanking. Collectively, these households spend about $89 billion in 2012 on interest and fees. This isn't even like stuff they bought. They spent $89 billion on interest and fees for non-bank financial services like payday loans and check cashing, which works out to an average of $2,412 per household, which means that the average underserved household spends roughly 10% of its annual income on interest and fees, which is about the same amount they spend on food. Further down, it says in the same report, the OIG, which is Office of Inspector General, the OIG explored the possibility of the post office offering basic banking services, such as bill paying, check cashing, small loans. I personally have suggested that the post office offer email services, which should be well within their charter because, you know, mail. With post offices and postal workers already on the ground, the Postal Service could partner with banks to make a critical difference for millions of Americans who don't have basic banking services because there are almost no banks or bank branches in their neighborhoods. I would insert that in areas, in neighborhoods that are underserved by banks, it would be a simple thing for the post office to say, if there is not a bank within a certain area for a neighborhood, the post office can put something there. And that way the banks, of course, the payday loan guys will be really ticked off. But the banks can't argue that they're being competed with because, you know, they're not serving that area. If the Postal Service offered basic banking services such as bill paying, check cashing, and small dollar loans, it could provide affordable financial services for underserved families and at the same time shore up its own financial footing. Postal Service employs more than 500,000 people, and we need innovative ways to create pathways for struggling families to build economic security, and this idea falls into that category. So those are excerpts from an article from February 4th, 2014, from Elizabeth Warren. I will add two more things, and then I'm going to go to Jerry. Number one, the post office is the only U.S. government department that is stipulated in the Constitution. Why? In my opinion, it's because the framers of the Constitution understood that in a country that covered so much geographical area, it was essential to be able to tie it together. Communications were critical. They didn't have radio, they didn't have television, they didn't have any electromagnetic media that were instantaneous. They had horses, they had boats, they had carriages, they had travelers who would bring stuff from one place to another. And they understood that if the country was to be united, there had to be a way for people to communicate from one end of it to the other. And therefore, they required that the post office be formed in the Constitution. Now, this raises to me an intriguing question that has not been posed. Do conservatives, and any others who side with them, but do conservatives violate the Constitution by financially hobbling the post office? Is it a constitutional obligation for our government to properly fund, finance, and support a constitutionally defined agency of communication within our country? Okay, I've spoken my piece. Let me do a quick station ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. Egberto Willis, who has his own show Thursdays from 3 to 4, Politics Done Right. Jeff Berg does his great show Fridays 3 to 4, Partisan Gridlock. And I will also say that KPFT would prefer not to do a December fundraising. Therefore, if you could call, and you can call in live at 713-526-5738, and Egberto will take your pledge. You can also call 713-526-5738 to simply talk on the air. So this is really, really unusual. We don't typically do this, but Egberto has said he's willing to take pledges on the phone. Or you can go to kpft.org, click on the tip jar, hopefully choose Think Wing Radio, and make your donation there. So we've got lots of options. We've got open lines, 713-526-5738, talk or pledge. And Jerry, you are on the air. Thanks so much for calling and waiting. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
Okay.
You know, actually, I've got a number of things to say that's in line with everything you just said, practically.
Okay.
Everything. For one thing, Japan has banking through the postal. They've got postal banking.
Yeah, apparently around the world it's not unusual.
It's not an unusual thing. Yeah, Japan, though, is a highly advanced industrialized country, though, that does that. Also, a few states actually offer, and it's cheaper than regular life insurance, they offer insurance, they call it postal insurance or something like that. And everything, but it's done, basically that is, I guess it's done through the post office or whatever. It's offered through the post office or whatever. That's only a few states, I think.
Kind of like affordable term life.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And so the idea is not really particularly alien on a policy, from a policy perspective anyway, especially if you look at it from a global point of view. But, and you also mentioned, let's see, what else did you mention? Oh, yeah, you mentioned, I was just going to say on that, like I said before, they're in love with the faux Reagan. They're actually, they're in love with the idea of Reagan.
He's mythologized.
Yeah, and everything, and not the real Reagan.
He would never be elected
Reagan
today.
Reagan worked with Democrats and was willing to wheel and deal.
He was not a great president. In my opinion,
no.
He's done long-term damage to this country.
Oh,
and now
so.
Even more so with the way he's been mythologized and people have cherry-picked what they like and enhance the things they like and overlook the things they don't.
Well, I mean, just say this to all the
Tea Party continues
out there. Go look at what the interest rates were, the prime rate was under Reagan in the later part of his presidency. It was way above 2%.
Oh, yeah.
Basically they tolerated an inflation rate way above, no, not the prime rate. They tolerated an inflation rate well above 2%.
To be fair, coming out of the oil boycott of 1973, there was a terrible stagflation, is what they were calling it. Low economic growth, high inflation, which Jimmy Carter had the bad luck to get involved in. At one point, interest rates were up around 17%. And my first mortgage in 1978, I paid 9%, and that was a pretty good rate at the time.
Yeah.
So, Reagan inherited this stuff actually from Ford and thence from Carter and then had to deal with it himself. And he and circumstances were able to bring it somewhat under control, but I don't think the inflation rate under Reagan ever got under 5%.
It came down quite a bit because Volcker, of course, basically strangled everybody he could.
Yeah. Well, 17% interest rates.
In retrospect, you know, the guy who should get the credit for that never does. Actually, Paul Volcker deserves the credit for that. Now, I will say one thing in favor of Reagan. Reagan did support him. Reagan didn't sit there and go, you know, didn't come up and say, you know, publicly, you know, Paul Volcker, you suck or anything like that, which a lot of Republicans and Tea Party people do now, I notice. With a lot of people. He was, you know, he kind of like held his horses and it worked for him.
And yet, to be fair, anything he said was irrelevant because the Fed is an independent body.
Right.
And his term is, his 4-year term is staggered with the president. So every president has to live with the former Fed chair for at least 2 years into his term.
Yeah. That's true. But anyway, but then you also mentioned, Al-Qaeda, and I also, let me just reemphasize, I said the prime rate, it wasn't the prime rate, it was the inflation rate.
Right.
They tolerated a substantially higher inflation rate.
Yeah, 5% looked pretty good at the time.
What?
5% by comparison looked pretty good at the time compared to what we had been dealing with.
Yeah, and you know, the problem with that whole rule is, the whole problem with that thing about, even Milton Friedman sat there and said that he didn't say 2%, he said I would have it between like 3 and 4%. Even he set the rate higher. He sat there and said, I'd have a computer that basically kept the inflation rate between 3 and 4%.
Yeah, it's a very counterintuitive kind of thing. You would think deflation with prices going down, just intuitively, you would think that's a good thing. But apparently, in macroeconomics,
it's worse than inflation.
It's a very bad thing.
Yeah, it's worse than inflation. That's something I've tried to mention. I mentioned a number of times on the air over the years. But, you know, you can do something. Once you get into that deflationary spiral, it's incredibly hard to pull out.
And
you only have to
look Japanese know that.
Called Japan once again,
yep.
Mentioning Japan yet again. Japan has that problem.
They've had that problem for 20 years now.
Or longer. Yeah, actually, it's been longer than that.
A generation of what would you call the opposite of stagflation?
Deflation.
It's deflationary.
It's a non-growth.
Stag contraction?
It's really low. It's really been slow or low or no growth.
Yeah.
You know, is what it's been for an extended period. And the problem is now the current president of Japan, the guy who currently runs Japan, is Abe. Abe, I'm mispronouncing it. He's running it. And he's
Abe would make him a nice old Jewish man.
Again, but now he's got a problem. They waited too long, and now, of course, the demographics are working against them really big time. It's one of the oldest, Japan's like the oldest, or certainly among the oldest countries overall, in the world as far as the population is.
There was actually an interesting article I ran across about a week ago. I don't know if I posted it on my website with a show or not, but they were talking about how when you account for the demographics, Abe's policy could arguably be said to be working, except that the demographics make it look terrible because there's less consumption because there are fewer young families forming.
Right, and everybody, you know, basically the problem is the way Japan works. And everything. Everybody saves tons of money for their retirement and everything. The Japanese are big savers because they save for their retirement. They have stuff, you know, they're all unionized and everything too, by the way. But the way they run their country, basically everybody saves big time for their, you know, we think, you know, you go watch the news and the Japanese spend a kajillion dollars on this and a kajillion dollars on that and everything. Well, you know, they look like spendthrifts when you go watch, you know, like the Travel Channel or something like that. They're really not. You know, they save a surprising amount of their income and invest it and everything because they need it for their retirement. They want to make sure that they have a relatively safe and comfortable retirement, and they don't want to, like, be a burden on their kids.
You know what? You've raised in my mind an interesting question. Since economics depends on spending, and since saving is anathema to economic growth, because it reduces consumption, it kind of might make the case for government pensions. It's like if a person in their working lifetime supports the economy by spending, then doesn't the government have a responsibility to support that person when they can no longer earn enough to spend and support the economy? Which government spending, I might add, also supports the economy.
Right. You're talking about something that, once again, I've talked about this before a little bit on the air, but mostly to other people face-to-face. And everything, you're right, and everything. And see, that's why Republicans, that's why, you know, you noticed Romney and Ryan, once again, Mr. Ryan of all people, were sitting there going, we're not going to do anything to Social Security. What happened was, behind the scenes, as they were told what would happen if they did anything to Social Security. They said, you touch Social Security and everything, and, you know, they talk about it being the third rail of American politics. Well, it's only more true in some ways now. What they told them was is that, you know, economists and some other people sat there and said, you touch that. You touch that. Not only will you be hammering your own, you know, your own base, but also what you'll do to the economy is send it immediately into a depression, basically.
I think the problem with conservatives, Republicans, conservatives, I think the problem is that they don't govern by the principles they state.
Yeah.
So, you know, they talk about not touching Social Security, but then what they want to do is raise the retirement age to 70, and they want to cut the COLAs on the cost of living increases on Social Security, which over time actually reduces what people are getting paid to support them.
Let me just state one thing in regard to that, and that is this year there was very little inflation and a no COLA, you know. Well, you hate to sit there and say no to people who basically, you know, like you said, are retired and maybe kind of need that little bit of extra money in some cases. You know, basically that made a certain amount of sense and everything. You know, the economic argument for that, you know, the financial argument for that was relatively sound for this year everything. And I don't think that this is, you don't hear Republicans and Democrats debating that very much.
Well, I have to make a point. You know, I have been to a pain management doctor a few times. And when they talk about raising the retirement age for full retirement to 66, 67, 69, 70.
Well, I'm not talking about that.
No, but I mean, that is one of the ways that they want to cut Social Security.
Oh, that's true.
It's essentially like the Alan Grayson version of Social Security. Die quickly, you know? And when I go into this pain management doctor, I'm not seeing people that look like executives. I'm not seeing people that look like business people. The people that I see consistently in that office are mostly ethnic, Hispanic, black.
Yeah.
They're mostly air conditioning repair people, gardeners.
They get a physical job.
People that do physical work. Those people, I have to tell you, by the time they're in their 50s, from a physical pain standpoint, most of them are ready to retire. From a physical pain standpoint.
Yeah.
So to raise those retirement ages, the concept of raising the retirement age is something that only a white-collar worker can love.
Yeah.
Because a white-collar person might not be happy about it, but typically they're physically, I mean, they're not in good shape, but they're physically less damaged than the typical laborer. And, you know, I was in a skilled trade for 20 years. My body is paying the price for it. And I wasn't even what's considered a hard trade. I was a window covering installer. Now, that involved carrying and bending over backwards, literally for hours a day, and carrying 30 pounds of tools on my hips. And I mean, I've got back and shoulder and neck and hip and lower back stuff. And I wasn't even doing something like roofing, where you're carrying bags of asphalt shingles, or doing something like framing where you're carrying heavy lumber, or something like air conditioning where you're schlepping these big units into attics and stuff. I had an easy trade. I can only imagine when you start working in a heavy trade like that by the age of 20, what you're feeling like by the age of 45.
Yeah, well, I'll just say this. On Business Insider, you sit there and say that about white-collar workers, but in fact, what Business Insider, I saw an article on Business Insider, they said that most people in the country, a considerable majority of the people in the country have, like, no emergency savings and everything, have no savings, including a bunch of actually upper-middle-class people, believe it or not.
Yeah, I believe
it. And they also don't have hardly any retirement either.
Yep.
And everything. And this is, I'm talking about relatively wealthy people and everything. So, you know, you got to wonder about what's going on out there and about some of these arguments, I basically would agree with you on that. But anyway, I just wanted to mention a couple other things. You mentioned the Paris attacks. Actually, everything you said was kind of like I either had a thought about or I was already ready to go on. I was just looking. I read a book this summer on Lashkar-e-Taiba, who was responsible for the Mumbai attacks back in 2008, November of 2008. You'll see, if you go look around in online, what you'll see is you'll see references to that in regard to the Paris attacks on Friday the 13th and everything, because that was another multiple shooter. That was like the first real, you know, basically multiple shooter attack that was really an outright terrorist attack.
Yeah, that
and
that at the time, I think.
Multiple shooter events, and I frequently wondered, well, go ahead.
Well, I mean, that made a big impression, but when you look back over the course of my lifetime, you know, we had the Achille Lauro attack, where they took over a cruise ship, they dumped an old man in a wheelchair into the Mediterranean, some people were killed. Carlos the Jackal, I think, was the one who was considered responsible for that. There was a shootout in an Italian airport, where a number of people were killed in the airport terminal. What I think has happened, now, of course, what we define as terrorism has, it's not like a brand new phenomenon. I think it's been amplified by the power of the weapons that now exist.
Yeah.
So at the time I was growing up, you didn't have jihadists. You had Palestinians, the PLO, offshoots of the PLO, that were conducting terrorist attacks in order to gain attention for their cause in terms of their conflict with Israel.
Yeah, Fatah and all that. Yeah.
So the Islamist attacks are really just sort of a continuation of that. The political goals are a little different.
Yeah.
The players, in some cases, are different. In some cases, they are the same. But this is not a new phenomenon. It's just been empowered by weapons technology to be much, much more horrific.
Yeah, that's true. But the thing about it is that we've just recently seen actual, you know, basically the U.S. pioneered this concept. Unfortunately, a bunch of criminals over here that we didn't really regard as necessarily as terrorist events, you know, two or three or four people would go out, and we had multiple shooter events like that. We had a number of those, and I always wondered why Al-Qaeda didn't pick up on that. But they did pick up on the 2008 Mumbai attacks, and I just have a few things that people might want to read, references to some stuff people might want to read. There was a thing in the New York
Give me a moment.
Daily,
hold on.
New
give
York
me a
Review
moment. Let me do a station ID and invite some other callers, and then I'll get back to you. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. So far, it's the Mike and Jerry and Egberto show. You might want to consider contributing to KPFT. It's a tax-deductible contribution. We're trying to avoid doing a December fundraiser because, you know, fundraisers on top of fundraisers, no fun for anybody. So you can call the show, and you can either be on the air, or you can tell Egberto you want to make a pledge, or you can do both. This is a very unusual opportunity. You can pledge and then talk. You can talk and then pledge. This is an amazing time in our lives. So you can go to kpft.org, tip jar, Think Wing Radio, make your pledge, and that's my station ID. We do have open lines. The number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. It's open forum, so you can talk about anything that has sort of floated your boat during the week or appalled you or interested you. We have been talking about almost half a dozen different topics here, so maybe there's something there you'd like to share with us. And right now, it appears that my guest is Jerry. So, Jerry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one other thing. I really think that the enabling technology for those multiple shooter attacks actually is cell phone technology, in essence. What you had a problem with before, what made those possible, in fact, as terrorist attacks, was the ability to coordinate and lead them and everything. And
that raises a question.
On the ground and stuff like that.
How much damage can we place responsibility for at Edward Snowden's feet?
Very little.
Do you really think so? I mean, think about it. He revealed U.S. capabilities. He revealed U.S. overseas, not just domestic, but overseas intelligent actions and capabilities.
That's true.
He brought on additional scrambling security, which made it much, much harder to monitor these very kinds of people that were important to monitor. So, to, you know, Edward Snowden is considered a hero by some, a villain by others, but objectively, how much of our struggle with electronic intelligence is now due to the after effects of Edward Snowden?
Shockingly little.
How would you say?
How would I say? Well, let me tell you, you know, I told you before I got checked out by Uncle Sammy one time.
Yeah, you mentioned.
And everything. That's why I got checked out. It was because between the time he was gone and they figured out he was gone and he had all that stuff and everything, and the time that he actually started putting out stuff, I had a little conversation with an old guy who didn't have hearing aids, so I had to talk kind of loud at a grocery store. This was a guy that used to talk about public affairs.
Talking loud in a grocery store about intelligence probably can be a risky proposition.
Yeah, it was that time. Yeah, and I didn't think it was because I actually looked around. I made it a point to make sure there was nobody that looked like they were with Al-Qaeda there.
The walls have ears.
Yeah, I realize that. But anyway, so I talked to the guy, and I told him what I was like practically certain that the government was able to do, and also what I was almost as closely certain that they were doing. And a number of things, after the Snowden stuff came out, I found out I hit the nail on the head four or five times. That's why I got checked out.
Mm-hmm. So
the problem is that I don't have any special access to anything.
Mm.
You know, basically, I just happen to take a serious interest in security matters, which includes intelligence. And, you know, it includes 101 other things, too, like military history and, you know, geopolitics and whatnot, foreign affairs, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, part of that's intelligence, and, you know, so I just told the guy what I thought they probably had, what I was, like, actually pretty confident they did have, and what I was pretty confident they were doing, and that got me into trouble.
Mm. We have open lines, 713-526-5738. If you would like for someone other than Jerry to be on the phone,
yeah.
Jerry's a great guest. I can talk to him for the whole hour if need be. But
I'll wrap it up with you here. Let me just give you these articles, and I'll wrap it up with you. Hopefully somebody else will call
sure,
in.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, the New York Review of Books Daily, it's the NYR Daily, actually, that's the way they list it. The article is From Mumbai to Paris by Ahmed Rashid. That's a recent article, a recent entry into the New York Review Daily. And it's free. You don't have to sign in or anything to read it either and everything or register with them. Then there's a bunch of stuff on Amazon, and there wasn't a few months ago. I actually did order a book and read it. The book was Storming the World Stage, The Story of Lashkar-e-Taiba by Oxford University Press. It's by a guy named Stefan Tankel, T-A-N-K-E-L. He talks about the Mumbai attacks and everything. That's the first real book that came out on, or one of the very first real books that came out on Lashkar-e-Taiba, who were responsible for the Mumbai attacks or attack. And, there's also some other stuff on Amazon, but you can get this anywhere, of course, on any type of, you know, Kobo or, you know, Google Books or whatever. I just happen to use Amazon all the time personally. Then there's the Mumbai Massacre DVD, which is actually really good. I've only seen part of it, but it did look like it was really well done. And there's actually a whole bunch of new stuff that's come out that Amazon's just added recently. I don't know why. But also there's a bunch of stuff on studies on different little individual studies by government entities on multiple shooters and how to respond to them and everything, and all that multiple shooter, you know, terrorist type events or criminal events and stuff like that. So there's a lot of information like that out there, and everything. And I just wanted to mention that, but that article by Ahmad Rashid is really, really good. And like I said, you don't even have to check in. You don't even have to, sign in with them or register with them and everything. And it's not real long either. So let me let you go. Let me let somebody else talk.
I appreciate it, Jerry. Thanks so much. You've been a great guest. I mean, you're not even a caller at this point. My God, you've been on the show for about 35 minutes now. Okay, open lines, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I know this is Thanksgiving week, and everybody's got plans and pulling their hair out. I am among you, by the way. But if you want to take out, you know, a couple of minutes, give me a call, speak your piece, hang up, and that would be great. I'd love to hear what you have to say. I still would love to address the question that essentially Benjamin Franklin posed. He made it as a statement, but it sort of becomes a question. How much essential liberty are we willing to give up for what might be temporary safety? Is there a way that we can achieve greater safety while still preserving our liberty? In other words, can we become a safer nation while still remaining a free nation? Or are these two objectives incompatible? And does Benjamin Franklin's quote not only speak a truth, but a sense of inevitability? I've got another caller on the line. Egberto, if you would plug me into John. We're just going to take a moment because he is suddenly very busy. John, I think you're on the air. Thank you, John. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I love these type of shows.
Thank you.
These are the kind of shows that the people in America need to listen to.
I have a hero by the name of David Fowler. Whatever his personal flaws, he did a great, great multi-interest show, and I try to use him kind of as my role model in that regard.
Yeah. Well, I listen to all of the shows on the low end of the dial, if you know what I mean, the 878s up to the 919s. I listen to all them shows on the low end of the dial. I'm a truck driver. I go from southern Illinois to outside of Houston, Texas, twice a week. And I'm not a terrorist, I'm not a criminal or anything like that, but I've been thinking about all of the stuff going on in America today, and it just, you know, we walk around clueless to what's around us, and I think that all of our emergency personnel, our police officers, our firefighters, our EMTs, and our nurses, our doctors, need to be aware that if anything is going to happen in America, I believe there's going to be more than one wave of attacks from multiple terrorists. I believe there'll be three or four terrorists at one scene, and when them terrorists are wiped out, another set of terrorists are going to come in, and they're going to attack our EMTs, our firemen, our police officers, our bystanders. You know, these guys, man, they sit and they think how they can destroy somebody. And they haven't done that yet.
You know, recently, just within the past day or so, there was a mass shooting. I wish I could remember the city it was in. It might have been Chicago, but I'm not going to swear to that, so
it
I don't want to.
It was in New Orleans.
Okay, thank you. New Orleans, yes. There was some kind of an impromptu party, impromptu music video being filmed. There was no, they didn't have any permits. But apparently some kind of a gang fight broke out, and like 300 people were injured. And, you know, one of the things that most people don't realize, our hospital system, our medical system is geared to a normal flow of sick and injured. Yeah. If we had a sudden attack, they don't have to attack the doctors or the ENTs or the nurses. A really successful, and I'm going to use the term advisedly, a really successful attack on American civilians that overwhelmed local medical facilities is not that hard to accomplish. There aren't that many burn units in the United States, actually. I think there are like maybe several dozen around the country for the proper treatment of burns. There are only so much space in emergency rooms, only so much blood supply. I mean, they don't have to attack the hospitals necessarily. They can overwhelm them if there were a successful attack.
I mean after they show up on the scene.
But again, that raises the question, is there a way for us to make ourselves more secure while still retaining our freedom? Or is that an incompatible solution?
Well, I tell you, we're in a terrible mess. I've got one daughter that's 25. She's in college in Phoenix, and she's already told me that they've had two false alarms of online terrorist activity, two false alarms in the last, it was a week. I think it was two or three days after or two or three days before the Paris attacks. I can't remember. But and then I got a 16-year-old. You know, I'm fearful of both their lives. I shouldn't be fearful of my children's lives in America.
Well, you know, for what it's worth, the odds of being killed in a terrorist attack are still probably less than being hit by lightning.
Yeah.
It's just fearful. It's fear-making, which, of course, is the point.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's terrible, you know. I don't know. But anyway, I'm driving right now. I've got to get off the phone. Thank you for taking my call.
I appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you.
Okay, we have another call. Let me do a quick ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. My compadre, Egberto Willis, is on engineering. He's got his show, Politics Done Right, or PDR, on Thursdays from 3 to 4 p.m., and I strongly recommend Jeff Berg's show, Partisan Gridlock, Fridays from 3 to 4. And I will also say that in order to help us avoid the need, because this has been a tough year fiscally, in order to help us avoid the need for a December fundraiser, if you could see your way clear to call in the phone number, 713-526-5738. Egberto would be happy to take your pledge, or you can go to kpft.org, do it online, hopefully select Think Wing Radio is the show that has prompted you to contribute, and help us raise some money more or less painlessly without having to turn off the call-in lines and turn them strictly into donation and pledge lines. You can do it, folks. You can do it. 713-526-5738. Okay, Johnny was actually next in line. He had dropped off. So, Johnny, you're on the air. How you doing? Bored? Bored? Are you implying that I cannot interest you?
No, you said I dropped off.
Well, I thought you had dropped off the line and then called back.
No, we've got to raise money for a new soundboard. Also, let's recommend Connect the Dots on Wednesday with Brother Robert Muhammad at 3 o'clock.
Sure. Yeah, I think he does a good show.
He calls it like it is.
Yep, I think he does a good show. He says important things.
Trump calls it the way he sees it.
Yes, he says, well, you know, there are a lot of people with whom I disagree, but that does not make their points invalid, or it does not make their points something that should be ignored. Their perspective is their perspective, and the whole point of free speech in a democracy is that we can hear it, we can understand it, we can think about it, we can talk about it. So, yeah, I think he does a good show from his perspective.
Except he's a presidential candidate, and he's a grown-up, and he needs to act responsibly and not take advantage of the fact that we have a weak national media system that allows people like him to get by with all kinds of lies and goofy stuff.
Who are we talking about, Robert Muhammad?
No,
oh.
Donald Trump.
Oh, you didn't. You just jumped on me. I'm sorry. I totally agree with that.
Okay, anyway, no, Brother Roberts, he's okay. He's golden.
I agree. He's a good guy.
He's a national treasure if the nation knew about him. Anyway, why I called is I wanted to share with your audience something that needs to be brought up. On the 14th of the month, 2 weeks ago, Saturday, I went to a potluck debate watch party to watch the Democratic debate.
Mm-hmm.
That was on a Saturday night. And a few nights later, when I was home, I decided I wanted to see it again on the satellite system because we have here a AT&T U-verse box.
Sure.
So I turned it on, and I pressed on the search function like I've done in the past, and I punched in different search terms, and I got nothing. But there was several Republican Party debates in the queue ready for me to watch. But I could not find the Democratic debate, which was only a few days prior to that. Now, that tells you,
hold on,
shows you the power that Republicans have over at AT&T, but also it's more telling of their insecurity about how valuable they are, that they have nothing to bring to the table, that they have to lie, cheat, and steal in order to get into office and hold it.
Don't necessarily disagree with you. I will say this, though. I have U-verse, and I think that what you're saying may be a little unfair, because prior to the Democratic debates, which I did record, you did have, I mean, normally they post these things on about a two-week rolling schedule.
And it was 5 days after the Saturday debate.
Yeah, but not after. After the debate, if they carry it at all, it would probably be on in the on-demand section, but I don't think it would be there either. You would probably have to go online, and I think that's true of the Republican debates by the time you're talking several days after as well. You would have to go online to find them. I'm sorry?
I had no problem in looking at all the Republican debates online, okay, for me to pick from. I could not find the Democratic debate. I used different search terms. I put
online. You're talking about online or on U-verse?
Democratic debate. CBS. I tried all those different things because it was on CBS. Nothing.
Well, you know,
I'm making this up. I would encourage other listeners to try it if they subscribe to U-verse like I do, and see what comes up, if anything.
Well, you know what?
I'd be really surprised.
I have a blog, thinkwingradio.com. And if you and I have an email address, thinkwingradio@msn.com. And if you want to write up a coherent piece about your experience, I'd be happy to post it for you.
Okay, I just might do that, depending on how I'm feeling.
I understand.
but I want to know if this is just a problem with U-verse, or I want to know people who have Dish and DirecTV, if they've noticed the same thing. Because if they go to the trouble of doing this on AT&T, why not the other two?
Well, those people are free to call and report it, or if I post your article on my website, then they can comment and let us know.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling.
You too. And be gentle with the soundboard.
Egberto is my buddy. I try to be gentle with my buddy. I have to tell you, I have been told, and I'm always amazed, I have been told that I can be gruff and intimidating. I actually think of myself as being something of a pussycat, but I have to respect that what people perceive is reality, so I try to dial it back a little bit.
I'm referring to the soundboard, not the operator.
Oh, the mechanics? Oh, Egberto, we don't give a damn
machine
about Egberto. It's just the board. It's the board.
Piece of electronics that's sensitive.
Piece of electronics, the board. Just treat it gentle. All right, I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for calling, Johnny. I appreciate you calling back.
All right.
Okay, next up we have Eric. Eric, how are you doing? Thanks for calling. I know who you are.
I'm doing great, Mike. I'm out here in Katy, Texas. I'm a longtime supporter of KPFT, sustaining member for more than 20 years.
Thank you.
I encourage everybody else listening to do the same. What a great program you've got. We're listening to really intelligent dialogue, which is so lacking in our society. So thank you for being a host for that. And
well, thank you.
Thank you for KPFT, which is a gem in our Houston society. You know, it's just amazing when you're on hold, you listen to all the different dialogue, and your mind wanders a little bit, and you kind of lose your focus. But my point in calling in tonight was I want everybody to take a deep breath, assume the lotus position, and do a deep om, because the hysteria in our consciousness seems to be like at a high point. I understand the terrorist attacks.
Yeah, that's the terror point of terrorism.
Yeah, that's the point. And they want to create fear. And the more fear you have, the more successful they've been. So you want to encourage them, react that way. You want to discourage them, ignore them. We are doing exactly what they want to do. And everybody says, you know, ISIL, ISIS, they've got this huge social media thing. And they understand the news media. Well, these guys are, and they are fundamentally, truly fundamentally guys still living in the Middle Ages who want to take Islamic society back into the Sharia days, the deep Sharia days.
Which goes back to my point that I think every religion must police its own extremists. I've got one more caller that I want to get on the air. I always try to make it a commitment to get everybody on who calls whenever possible.
Got it.
But I thank you so, so much for calling, and I appreciate your comments.
Thanks,
Eric. Take care. Okay, I think it's worth repeating that your odds of being hit by lightning are about 1 in 500,000. Those are better odds than either winning the Texas lottery or getting killed by a terrorist. Just saying. Okay, Frank, I think you're going to be the last caller for the evening. How are you doing tonight? You're on the air.
Yeah, I enjoy your program. You know, I wanted to make a little correction.
Okay.
Teddy Roosevelt, I also agree, was a great president, would have been a great, great president and great man. He had all the correct objectives, except when it came to militarism and our foreign policy.
Nobody's perfect.
He was a great president and a great man.
He was an imperialist.
Except for the million, he was an imperialist. Except for, you know, the million Filipinos that were massacred on his orders, he was a great president.
So okay.
Eisenhower was a decent president.
A decent
really
president.
Really and truly.
Yeah. Although he held us back in the space race.
And he coined the term military-industrial complex.
Which is amazing to most conservatives, and I think that's why they don't like him very much. It sounds like a very communist thing to say.
Right.
I think
so,
that...
really and truly, then, you know, taking Teddy Roosevelt out because of mass murder,
okay,
then Bill Clinton really was the best Republican president since Lincoln.
That's what Rachel Maddow believes.
Indeed. Well, I'm glad she agrees with me.
Or you, her, if she said it first. I'm not sure.
Correct. Yeah, that was just really dire. I guess it somewhat set a tone for our foreign policy.
Well, I think not dismissing what you're saying about his external affairs policies, which were sort of ruthless, I think when you evaluate people within the context of their time, imperialism was a perfectly respectable enterprise. Ruthlessness in foreign policy, I mean, even today, they say that countries don't have friends or enemies, they have interests. And I think we see that more today than we have maybe in the last 50 years. So, not to excuse what Roosevelt did, but he did give us national parks, he did give us the Food and Drug Administration, he did break up monopolists, he did break up the the oil trust and the railroad trust,
you know, and busting up trusts.
Yeah, so I mean, in a lot of ways,
and he was for the common man, even though he came from a very patrician background.
True. I need to let you go. Music is playing, but I thank you so much. Call earlier next time.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Frank.
Okay,
thank
you, sir.
You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and my compadre Egberto Willis on engineering. Remember to give to KPFT. KPFT.org, the tip jar. And as Winston Churchill once said, democracy is the worst form of government except for all those other forms that have been tried from time to time. Winston Churchill, 1947. Have a great week. I'll speak to you next Monday. Don't eat too much. Take care.
Triumph and tragedy, from the emergence of fresh new artists to the passing of some of the greats, from the major news stories that shape our world to the presidential election next year sure to determine our future. You may not know what 2016 holds, but you can keep your independent source alive so you get what you love and need. 90.1 KPFT Houston is a nonprofit radio station bringing you news, music, culture, and more 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We do not rely on advertising to power the radio you hear. We depend on listeners to contribute to keep it on the air. Every bit of help during this last stretch of the year helps. Maybe you want to get that year-end tax deduction, or maybe you want to give someone a gift membership to KPFT, or one of our fantastic t-shirts, mugs, or exclusive CD sets. Don't wait until the end of December. Give now at kpft.org. Thanks. KPFT is seeking Spanish language programming for its schedule. KPFT needs your voice for the best programming possible. Interested? Send an email to the program director, pd@kpft.org.
La estación de radio KPFT quiere programación en español. Necesitamos su voz para la mejor programación posible. ¿Interesante? Envía un correo electrónico a el director de programación, pd@kpft.org. Gracias. KPFT, Houston.